I'm Scott Simon of Simon Says, and our first featured guest is on the board of directors of NPR. Now, they have a terrific talent by the name of Scott Simon at NPR, and he's been there for a number of years.
I know.
And there's just no room for me there. There's no room for me at National Public Radio. So the only thing I can do is to have a podcast to stand out on my own. So there you go, Jay Pierce. You're off the hook. You don't have to review my application for a job.
So whenever somebody sees that I'm connected with you on Facebook or somewhere else, they go, "Is that the Scott Simon?" I go, "Yeah." which one were you talking about?
Yeah.
It's Pierce, the Scott Simon that I've known for over 40 years. Yes.
Yeah.
And I've known the other one for a decade, so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, Jay Pierce is on the board of directors of National Public Radio, but he does more than that. He's also the chief executive officer for WVIK in Rock Island, Illinois, and I said the call letters right, and the reason why I mentioned that is because a little more than 10 years ago, as a program director of a news talk station in Knoxville, my office was next door to the legendary country station, WIVK. So every time I refer to you and your station, I have to do a double check to make sure I'm saying your call letters right. WVIK, owned and operated by Augustana College. And tell us how you got there.
We are the Vikings. You can remember it that way. So I got here because I essentially, 6.5 years ago, I had been, you know, up and down Illinois and spent a little bit of time in Missouri and a little exile in Texas, but mostly Illinois. I was pretty much, you know, qualified for retirement from the state system. The university system. And so not being ready to retire, I basically was looking around to see what was going on. And there were a couple of places that I knew here in Illinois where managers were going to retire. And I was a station manager at WILL Radio at University of Illinois. So moving up to general manager of a station would be a step up in the career. And I thought it'd be a cool thing to do. Never really been to the Quad Cities other than passing through. I think I was here for a day during a convention one time, but didn't know much about the place. And so WVIK's opening for a general manager intrigued me, and so I retired from University of Illinois and took this job. And the first time that I really had a chance to look at the Quad Cities was when I came up for the interview, and it was one of those, oh, my gosh. I knew that Moline was here because of John Deere Tractors, and I had friends that worked in Davenport and Bettendorf and Rock Island. But, you know, once I came up and saw what I was here, I was like, wow, this is great. I want to do this, and got the job, and here we are.
One thing that I find interesting about your station as opposed to other NPR-affiliated stations is – many NPR-affiliated stations are owned and operated by big universities, such as where you used to work, the University of Illinois. University of Texas has an NPR station. Augustana College isn't a public university, and it isn't very big.
No, and there's some of us like this. You know, Bradley University in Peoria owns WCBU. There are community licensees like Chicago and New York. But, it's a small liberal arts college here in the Bluffs over the Mississippi River, 2,500 students, very excellent college, very excellent academics and quality of student life. The focus at Augustana College is basically on helping students along the path of their college career to become full individuals, ready to not only take on whatever their career is going to be, but life as well. And they're very focused on helping to ensure success. So they have this radio station, primarily a classical music station that runs some NPR news and a very excellent, very small staff, and just kind of hanging on like a lot of stations. And so I saw this as a wow. There's a first of all a great foundation at this radio station, but second of all a lot of opportunity, and the Quad Cities in particular offers a lot of opportunity to get involved with arts, culture, and other things important in the community. So that's pretty much been my focus the last 6.5 years, is building on the foundation of excellence that WVIK's had.
Jay Pierce is Chief Executive Officer of WVIK Radio, but he's also on the Board of Directors of National Public Radio, another hat. How did you get to that position?
Well, I ran for the position in an election. They have 3-year terms, and the board is, I think it's 24 people right now, maybe 23. I'd have to count around the table. But it's divided roughly half station managers and half public members, and we all run for election. The people who vote us in are called the A-Reps, the authorized representatives. Each NPR station gets to designate, it's usually the manager of the station who is the authorized representative. So each member station A-Rep gets a vote, and when you get yourself on the ballot, you express interest to the governance committee at the NPR board, and then you basically run a campaign. You lobby, I guess, the other managers to vote for you. You send them your credentials. You tell them what your interest in the board is and what you think you could do for the board and serving NPR and then and the member stations. And then they actually have a candidates forum. And as a matter of fact, as we're recording this afternoon, there will be a candidates forum for the election that's currently taking place to fill a seat. And well, actually, there's a few seats. A couple of our people who were appointed to fill unexpired terms, and so they'll be being elected. Possibly to a full term. And so, yeah, so it's done very, I think, democratically across the system.
How long will you be on the board?
Well, let's see. It'll be 2 years in September, and so I'll have one more year in this term, and then I can run for another 3-year term. You can do 2 consecutive terms, and then you have to step off. Later, you could come back and run again if you want, but you have to sit out for a while.
Why did you want to be on the NPR board? Don't you have enough to do at WVIK?
I have plenty to do. In addition to being on the NPR board, I'm treasurer of the Illinois Public Broadcasting Council, vice chairman of the Opportunities Never Ending Foundation in Bettendorf, vice chair, just immediate past chairman of the board of River Music Experience in Davenport. I'm the immediate past, well, as of in a couple of days, I'll hand over the pin, and I'll be the immediate past president of the Quad Cities Illinois Rotary Club. Let's see, what else do I do? I'm on the board of directors of the Illinois Associated Press Broadcasters Association and the Illinois News Broadcasters Association Foundation. I think that covers it. So why? Why did I want to be on the NPR board? Other than I'm at a position in my life where I feel like I have gained maybe some measure of wisdom in my 45 years in broadcasting. I've been in management now. Well, I guess I've almost always been in management. You know, I was the student station manager at WSIU back in 1977, I guess it was, when we were in college together. So I think it's a matter of giving that knowledge back to the industry, service to other organizations that I, you know, have an ability to be involved in, and, you know, something to offer. And I feel like, you know, at this point, that's kind of what you do. the board of NPR was of particular interest because as you look around the table, larger stations were well represented, but I'm a small station. You know, we're a $1.2 million budget, which puts us in the probably lower 25% of all the stations around the country. And a lot of us are stations that our communities have the capacity to support us to an extent. You know, the amount of money you can raise is finite, and you have to work hard to encourage people to contribute it to you, which means you have to do a lot of good service to be worthy of that. So it's hard when you're small. You know, we're only 9 full-time and 4 part-time people and some interns. And so I thought it was very important to have a station of our size represented on the NPR board.
You do a lot of different things, and you just made me feel bad. You know, starting Simon Says, my talent budget was very small to start out with, and you broke the bank at $1.27, and you do all those other things. I mean, you have enough to do. I didn't need to pay you. I mean, you just broke my talent budget and hearing about all the things you do. Truthfully, you're worth more than that.
The whole thing about it, Scott, I guess it's I call it the nonprofit mentality. Nonprofits, and I'm not talking about I guess NPR is a pretty big nonprofit, but a lot of the ones I'm involved with, you know, it's not like the magnitude of Red Cross or or United Way. But, you know, a lot of us nonprofits, it's a mentality, I think, that you get of service. And, it's like being involved in Rotary Club, service above self. It's I have something that I feel would be an asset. If you believe so, too, then I would like to work with you, you know, to work somewhere in the community and do something. And I've always kind of felt like that. I suppose in a way, years ago, I was working in commercial radio, but I would work with community organizations even back then, Domestic Violence Task Force, emceeing the Little Mister and Miss Pageant, emceeing the fireworks for a small town, the Peach Queen Festival, you know, that kind of stuff. I've just always felt like if I have something that you think is worth or it would help your organization, and I can't say that time is always a qualifier for me, because I call this past year of my life the year of overcommitment, but things are being handed off and it's going okay.
I'll tell you, I'm so grateful that you were able to spend a little time with me for my podcast, because you have great interesting stories to tell. I mean, you're worth more than $1.27. You're worth easily 3 times that. You're worth about $3.71. That'll get you a Made Right sandwich. Do they still have Made Rights in Quad Cities?
Loose meat. Yeah. Yes, we do. We have loose meat sandwiches right down the block. Well, actually, it's about a mile away over in Moline from where I am. Yes. We do.
For our listeners who don't know what a loose meat sandwich or Made Right is, if you watch the original Roseanne show in the 1980s and 1990s, she had a restaurant. It was a loose meat sandwich, and it was based on the Made Right system, and it was suggested for the script by her then-husband, Tom Arnold. And they are terrific sandwiches. They got me through many a morning at WSDR in Sterling, just up the road from you. So.
Yeah. And they just changed ownership again.
Yes, and I saw that they just won a big award in Illinois from the Illinois Broadcasters Association for the community involvement. So it's nice to see that commercial stations have community involvement, but the community involvement that you're telling me that you do as CEO and general manager of WVIK, and on the national on the board of directors of National Public Radio. It shows that broadcasting, there are broadcasters still that want to be in touch with the community.
Well, and I think when you get down to it, most broadcasters do. You know, you do. I know you do. I know. That's what we do as broadcasters. My concern is that when you get to a certain corporate level, corporate ownership, hedge funds, investment companies that are investing in broadcasting organizations and not, well, you know, this is all opinion. I have a belief in a way that a radio station should operate and what it owes to a community. It's not commonly shared necessarily among some. And you get to the point where you look at a cluster of radio stations that sound pretty good on the air. You know, everything runs smoothly. It sounds like there's a lot of people there. And they're voice tracking or they're getting voices in from satellite. And there's really not many people in the building anymore. And yeah, to me, that's sad. And I understand, you know, that's, it's an investment. People make money off of it and the like. And that's fine. That's their business model. That's fine. And the reason that I've been in public radio straight for the last, 1997, I guess.
Yeah, 21 years.
21 years now straight. And before that, it was, you know, a 7-year stint. Before that, it was, you know, when we were in college. And so, you know, my belief is that radio is a very powerful, powerful medium. Very powerful. People listen to what you say when we talk. And we have a, in my opinion, we have a responsibility. We're on a, I don't know, you know, and I'm not sitting here espousing censorship. What I'm saying is that we have a responsibility about what we say. And opinions are great. A variety of opinions are fantastic. You should have many news sources. You should read all the opinions, even ones you don't like or agree with. You should at least read their case. You know, why, what are they backing their statement with? You have to look into that. Talking points, yeah. But, you know, what's behind them? Where did you get that talking? You know, where did you get that view from? Is it just because somebody else said it, or did you do a little research and do you really, you know, believe that? So we have a great responsibility. When we open the microphone, people are listening, they're paying attention. And I think in public radio, it's my belief again, and obviously I'm on the board of NPR and I run a public radio station. And I look at the, you know, those little maps that come out and they show NPR maybe just a little bit to the left of center, but pretty much in the middle compared to some other organizations and stuff. So two things out of that. One is we have responsibility to the community that we serve, and that used to be mandated by the FCC, and it's really not anymore. So sometimes you find that the news costs a lot of money to do, so stations don't do it. And public radio stations are doubling down on their commitment to do it. So sometimes the public radio station, even though we get branded as lefties and libtards or whatever, what did somebody call me yesterday? A theocrat.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, I don't even know what he was. Well, I do know what he's talking about. So the point of it is that we're doing journalism in the community, and journalism's important to democracy. So we're doing it, and I believe we're doing it as close to the middle as you can, being fair and as thorough as we can. I don't know if that's totally an absolutely possible to be completely, you know, what even is the middle? I don't know, you know, what it is, but we try to be fair. We try to be thorough. And then the second thing of it is, owning a radio station can be very lucrative. Owning a lot of radio stations can be really lucrative. My problem is I just, as a broadcaster, I see what happens when you get down to the local level and you're not in town and you're not, paying attention to the community isn't the same definition, serving the community. So it's me, but that's me. And that's why I'm in public broadcasting, because, you know, we're very mission oriented. We have to have a business model. We have to pay our bills, but, and you know, there's no public service without funding to back it. But at the same time, we're very mission oriented. And when we seek funding from people, businesses, or wherever, it's to support the mission. So,
well, people, I'm going to say people do listen to public radio. Yes. The Nielsen audience ratings show that. We'll talk about that in a little bit on the Simon Says podcast. But when you go to a National Public Radio Board of Directors meeting, what do you take with you to the table that we can hear out of our speakers?
Well, I take the voice of, stations and communities of the size I'm in. Our community, we're in radio speak, the 150th market. It's about 350,000 people. But I've worked in markets smaller, you know, the Carbondale market, a lot smaller. I've also worked in Chicago, but, you know, a lot bigger. But, the market size that we're in, 350,000 or so, that's the Quad Cities metropolitan area. A split between Illinois and Iowa. We're kind of a little blue island here the Quad Cities is kind of a little blue island in a red sea. We have a mixture of political flavors. So what I take to the table is this. I'm here in the middle of the country. We're not inside the Beltway. We're not on the West Coast. And I bring the voice. You know, when we're going through this whole election, people kept criticizing the media for not talking to America, not talking to the people who voted for Donald Trump because he appealed to them. To them because he spoke to them, and we were criticized for not going out into the field, as it were, or the fields, and talking to the people who really make up America. Well, that's what I represent, because I'm right here in the heartland, as they say, and I have lived in coal mining country and worked in coal mining country and agriculture, farming country, and now I'm in I'm not going to call it a rust belt, because industry is pretty good here in the Quad Cities. We've got, you know, the world headquarters of John Deere. We've got Arconic, which was Alcoa. I think it's their largest North American plant here. The competitor to Rubbermaid for Sterilite is building a large factory here. Han Office Equipment is here. Steelcase. We have a large craft plant, and so there's a lot of industry here too. So I've got industry, agriculture, and then we have colleges and universities here too. So we've and business, a lot of just regular old business, professional business. Microsoft's got a big presence up in Dubuque. So, you know, Coney Elevator used to be Montgomery Elevator. Kone is a headquarter here. So we've got a great mix that represents America. This is like a microcosm here. And that's what I bring to the table. I represent that, the people that were forgotten, I guess, in the last election.
And you have a terrific bowling alley there in the Black Hawk Hotel, which is owned and operated by a really good friend of mine, Jim Barton in St. Louis, who owns Saratoga Lanes, the oldest bowling center west of the Mississippi River. And I think you've been there a couple times.
I didn't know that. Yeah, the Martini Bowling Alley. Yeah, it's retro. It's above ground ball returns. And they have a martini bar down there, and it's a gas. In fact, when we had the Illinois Public Broadcasting Council retreat here a few years ago, we rented out. They have a little area off to the side where you can rent two lanes for an exclusive party, and so we did that, and it was a lot of fun. It
Well,
was great.
if you, if you have one of these get-togethers and you have a friendly tournament, you can take your massive budget and fly me in as the ringer on your team.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So, funny story about the Hotel Blackhawk, since you talked about it. That's an old hotel. It was the old historic, the quintessential downtown massive hotel in Davenport, Iowa, home of Big Spiderbeck. And that hotel is where Cary Grant was performing. It's connected to an old vaudeville theater. It's called the Adler Theater. They just reconstructed the marquee. It's a wonderful restored beauty. And so Cary Grant was performing there, but staying at Black Hawk when he fell ill, and they rushed him to the hospital, and he died on the way to the hospital. So Hotel Black Hawk's pretty, infamous, not just for that, but so. When I was luring Cokie Roberts of NPR to come here and be keynote speaker of our annual gala for the radio station, pretty ambitious for a small station, but she came, and she did a wonderful job. We more than sold out. We had to open an overflow room and put in a camera and a big screen. But when I was telling her about coming here, I said, well, we'll be doing this in the Gold Room, in the hotel where Cary Grant died. She was like, I don't know if that's a selling point or not. It was funny. But the hotel, the Gills from St. Louis, Restoration St. Louis, as a matter of fact, has restored a number of buildings in Davenport now. Beautiful. They've just put in a very modern hotel called the Current with a sky top, the up bar. It's up on the roof, and it's one of my favorites now. But they're doing some other buildings, and they did the Black Hawk. They restored this hotel meticulously, down to the gold leaf. They took the false ceiling out of the lobby and exposed an atrium roof, beautiful stained glass atrium. It's just a gorgeous place. You don't expect to walk into somewhere like that in a city, of 100,000, 120,000 people, and it's just beautiful. And Restoration St. Louis has done an amazing thing with that. The place almost got torn down. There was a fire. It had become kind of a transient hotel. This was probably 10, 15 years ago. It's not that long ago. And the story goes that a meth lab exploded on the seventh floor and almost burned the whole thing down. But they came in and they saw potential in it. And boy, it's there. I want to say a Marriott signature hotel. Does that sound right? So anyway,
Hey,
beautiful thing.
you're talking about some great things regarding broadcasters connecting with the community, and you're appearing on my podcast. Your station, WVIK, has a terrific podcast that blew through the charts not that long ago, didn't it? Correct?
Last year, yeah, it hit number two in the world. So.
Tell us about it, because first question before we talk about that. You do WVIK has podcasts, other radio stations have podcasts, even some television stations have podcasts, probably newspapers have podcasts. Do you consider that competition or just a part of the product that you present to the public?
It's another platform, and as a matter of fact, this is a very timely conversation because we're in the process of making some big decisions here at the station, because smart speakers have become so mainstream now, and we're getting a lot of data in now that they're a couple years old, and we're getting the not just the early adopters, but we're getting mainstream users of these things. And online with apps on a smartphone and smart speakers becoming a very viable broadcast platform. In addition to what you do over the air, we're talking a lot about this and making different things available. So a podcast, we're limited on the air sometimes to 4 minutes, a 4 minute segment we can drop into an NPR show, Morning Edition, or All Things Considered. Or if we have a Saturday morning talk show, we can spend almost an hour on a topic. But with a podcast, like, so you and I talking now, what you would do to present this on the radio because of attention spans and time people can dedicate to it is you would chop it down to about 4 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. All of the stuff we're talking about for however long we talk on a podcast, we can stick it on a podcast and go much longer. We can go much deeper into it, and people can fast forward through or whatever they want to do and hit the highlights. It's really cool. It's like, you know, when you and I were doing radio together, we would have had to send cassettes out to everybody for them to do that.
Yeah.
We didn't have the internet. We didn't have computers. You know, none of this nonsense.
Some of our stations didn't even have tape.
Yes, that's right. We used to use, when advertising agencies would send us commercials on tape, we would keep that tape and use it for our own production. So we were cheap. But anyway, it expands what we're able to do. So this podcast, Suspect Convictions, and it's still up there. You can look at suspectconvictions.org or go to WVIK.org and find it. It's expanded into some other things. The guy we were working with has done another case with another public radio station over in Normal, Illinois, WGLT, and he's working on some other stuff now. But this was a case here. Stanley Liggins, years ago, was convicted in Rock Island of killing a young girl, and then his conviction was overturned, and he was reconvicted, and it was overturned, and now he's going to trial for a third time, and we're like, what? So just, you know, out of Journalism Network or whatever, happened to have a discussion with the reporter who was at the Quad City Times at the time, who was the first reporter on the scene when the body was found. And he's been following the case, you know, even though he's not here anymore. He's in Peoria now. He writes a column and does some other things. But he was interested in this and wanted to know if the radio station, you know, had an interest in working with him on it. And we thought, just after talking, he and I talked, and it became like, you know, we could run some parts on the air, but, you know, what about doing a podcast? And so I turned him on to Serial, which was the big podcast of the time, which was a similar thing. You know, crime podcasts were, you know, really big, still are. And so I had him listen to it, and I said, what if we did this, you know, this kind of thing, investigated? Oh, he was all over it, because he was writing a book on it already. So he'd already done a lot of investigating and a lot of interviews. So we went back and redid the interviews. I assigned one of our producers, I make it sound big, our producer to it. And she was fresh out of an internship at Chicago Public Media, and I hired her as a producer here. And so the two of them worked on it, and I gave them some advice, and our operations manager here at the station gave them some technical advice and worked with them on it, and, you know, editing the interviews and putting music to it and different things like that. And it turned out pretty good. We did a dozen or so of them, and we're going to do some more because he's going back to trial. Problem is, the woman who was producing it has left, and she is now a production assistant on the CBS Morning News in New York. So I don't know if the attention she got for that for WVIK helped, but I think she was pretty good and could have gotten the job anyway. But I like to think that, you know, that didn't hurt her.
No, it didn't. And,
you know, and it helped us. And so it showed that, you know, you don't have to have a lot in the way of resources to produce something really important. And podcasting lets you get in there and do some cool stuff. So
Jay Pierce isn't going anywhere, folks. He's going to be back a little later in the week with some bonus content. We're going to talk about some issues that are hot topics on social media, and he'll give you the straight answer. Jay Pierce is on the board of directors of National Public Radio. He's also the chief executive officer of WVIK Radio, the Augustana College-owned and operated station in Rock Island, Illinois. This is Simon Says, and we want you to subscribe to our podcast. You can do so in one of several ways. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music. The Stitcher application you can download on your phone so you can catch future episodes of Simon Says without much problem. And you can also go to my website where the podcast is featured at SimonSaysStories.com. Jay, why don't you tell people how people can connect with you and your station?
Just remember WVIK.org, WVIK.org, and you'll find us and you'll find links to our podcasts and everything else.
That's Jay Pierce. I'm Scott Simon on Simon Says. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you for our next episode.